themselves in the waiting room. For the doctors to provide that kind of information and certainly something that hopefully will happen. I'm glad that the Bureau is.
Yeah, we actually sent a massive mailing to every eye doctor registered in Connecticut. We provided information for their waiting rooms and some posters. And that's actually how I ended up getting one of the eye doctors from Solinsky Eye Care to join us. I had gone there for my own eye exam several years ago and saw our poster in the examining room. And I go, oh, that's us. I said, fortunately, we don't have anyone from your practice as a low vision provider. And so now, you know, we see Dr. Justin is one of the low vision providers we have. So sometimes it works, but it's a very involved process to get a doctor to want to become a low vision provider. They can't just say yes. I mean, the fact that they have to complete, there's a committee that reviews the doctor's credentials. So, you know, we want to be sure that those that we say are low vision doctors meet a certain set of criteria. That's actually in our statute that we have to do that. So they can't just say, okay, I'll be one. They have to be willing to commit the time to complete all that patient work as well. And so we recognize it and continue that to get patient
done. Philip O'Brien?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, Brian, I just want to, of course, thank you for that comprehensive and thoughtful report, but I also want to pay you some kudos for your very overt willingness to help in any way possible, of course, under the purview of NFSD, to provide better services or different types of services to the clients such as myself. It's very encouraging to have you with that attitude that really gives us an hope that things can change and we're not stuck doing things the same old way. So I really appreciate that. Your attitude is always very much appreciated.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate you saying that. I think that the cost assessment, which is built right into the Federal Rehab Act requirement, allows for this continual refresh. And COVID, while it certainly created some horrible situations in people's lives, there may be some things that come out of all of this that will hopefully be beneficial. And one of the things I'm encouraged by is the virtual work scenario. One of the biggest challenges we've always had, that's almost the first, and night is on the phone to tell you, what was the first thing you'd have to say? Can the client get there? Is there a bus that will get the client there? You know, what time are the hours of his job? And can the client, get a bus so that they're not hanging around for 2 hours? With virtual employment, which now crosses the borders of states where hopefully, like I said earlier, maybe an employer in Ohio, would hire a client from Connecticut because it's virtual. It doesn't matter where the client lives. They just need the technology and the capacity to do things. So I'm encouraged that even in the darkest of these times when we've been dealing with this pandemic, that I'm hopeful that out of that can come some new beneficial opportunities that may not have otherwise been forced to the forefront when we were having to do, when we were only looking at the world in the old way. We're now looking at things in a new way. And so
Brian, this is Anita. Can I weigh in on what you're discussing right now? I'm sorry?
Yes, please do.
Okay, great. I had recently, over the COVID, had a paid internship with a Connecticut client out of Sherman with a data analytics company in Boston, Massachusetts. And that went very well. Just to, back up with what you're saying.
Thank you. Okay, Madam Chair, I guess that's it for the comprehensive needs assessment.
Okay, we're going to move on to the consumer satisfaction survey report, and that is also you, Brian.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to just take a sip of something warm. I'm starting to my voice a little from talking, so bear with me for just a second.
I did almost say take a drink of something, Brian.
Thank you.
And don't forget to breathe, too.
So the Consumer Satisfaction Survey, which was also done by CPSU, and just as an aside, having them do a comprehensive needs assessment and having all the longitudinal data from the Consumer Satisfaction Survey allows them to really do a good statistical analysis. So I think there's some real value in having continuity so that the reports are not disconnected from each other. And so with this satisfaction survey, which they completed, and again, I should have made this in Gary. I think this is also on the website. I seem to recall it is, but I will double check just to be sure. So they were able to complete 40 surveys, which, I think is relatively typical of about how many folks they're able to get. They said they made a maximum of 11 attempts per individual. So there's no shortage of attempts to get people to complete the survey. But I did want to highlight in just a few things that they found. I'm just scrolling down on the document to where I highlighted things. I had mentioned in the comprehensive needs assessment report that they had indicated that they saw a sizable drop in clients that utilized rehabilitation equipment, is what they call the category. Well, here's the data. In 2019, it was 81.5% of survey respondents said they had received rehabilitation equipment. In 2020, it was down to 65%. I think that's its all-time low, frankly. So, clearly, more needs to be done. Skills training also had a significant drop in 2020. Now, again, in 2020, I just want to be sure you understand what 2020 is. July 1 of 2019 to June 30 of 2020 is the time period that we're looking at. So, when you go into June 30, 2020, the pandemic hit in March of 2020, so pretty much your entire last fiscal quarter of 2020, where this survey scooped up participants, was when we were very much in a lockdown mode in the country. So some of the drop in skills training utilization is because there weren't vendors available in that final quarter of the year. Most of the vendors that we would utilize during the fourth quarter, they were not providing services. And that is continued well into the new fiscal year as well. But skills training was at 20%, whereas in 2019, 30% of the clients have indicated they had skills training. Higher education really went down considerably. Now, we know for certain that many of the schools shut down. In fact, we had a lot of students that were sent home. In March, they were told, go home, you know, we're shutting down the campus. But we went from higher education training 22% down to 7.5%. That's a significant drop. Scrolling down further, heading into satisfaction ratings now. So here's your mean satisfaction rate, where things were. Religion services went down a little bit. In 2019, low vision satisfaction, client satisfaction with low vision services was an 8.5 out of 10. In 2020, was a 7.86 out of 10. Rehab equipment also went down somewhat in 2019. It had a mean satisfaction rating of 8.41 out of 10. It went down to 7.88 out of 10 in 2020. Skills training had a bit more of a significant drop. That went from 9.25 out of 10 in 2019 down to 7.75 out of 10. Well, I'm almost anticipating some of that level of drop with skills training is because people that were in training suddenly found that they were being told, you're not going to get training. Now, transportation has never really been a high-rated category. Like in 2019, it was 6.71. It dropped to 5.80, which is really, really low. And just to speak to this for a moment, I've been working with AT&T and the Department of Transportation on a collaborative to try to see if we can make, there are products available that will help people navigate more independently their environment. You probably heard of a product called IRA. Some of you may have heard about IRA. And we're working on initiatives to see if there could be a grant made available to provide IRA on a pilot basis for clients that are blind to utilize any public transit. Well, we got a little ways to go. It's been almost a year in the making, and we're not there yet. But we're encouraged, and it's looking like it may be possible to offer some sort of a pilot opportunity where we could make this type of a product more readily available to individuals so that they have greater independence when they're using public transit and they're traveling in their community. So I only bring this up because, you see survey information, and I don't necessarily feel that we want to just wait until the next state plan to start trying to address certain things, but it is a process to try to get things in place. But we are working on it, and I'm encouraged by the direction it's going. So hopefully, that will come to fruition in the future. Small businesses is really also no stock. We've seen some decline in satisfaction there. Many small businesses have it closed. Some of the people have been out of work because of their businesses. So that went from a mean rating of 8.5 out of 10 satisfaction in 2019 to 6.2 satisfaction out of 10 in 2020. Just scrolling down to see if there's anything else I wanted to highlight. It says services. We have technology. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't even see what this was. It says the majority of satisfied clients were 69% were satisfied. 4 respondents reported dissatisfaction with the services. 2 stated they want a different product, while one cited a lack of follow-up from Besby, and the other said their needs were ignored. In qualitative responses, 2 clients stated software and equipment they received didn't work correctly. Another client experienced delays when receiving software for training. So what you'll find is where people get very high responses of satisfaction, 8, 9, or 10 out of 10, or give very low responses for satisfaction, which is a 1, 2, or 3, then they ask these drill down questions to find out, if you said you were dissatisfied, how come? So of the 4 respondents, that's what they gave. Again, the majority of respondents indicated that they were satisfied, 69%, which is up from 56% in 2019. Just scrolling down to see if there's anything else. I'm kind of aware of the time frame. Now, in skills training, 13% gave a level of dissatisfaction, but the sample size was only 8 people. So it's a fairly low number of folks that got skills training. So when I look at the ratings, I feel the whole sample size was 8 people, and 13% said they were dissatisfied. That's probably 1 person. So the reason I bring that up is I think it's important that we look at sample size so that we know, are we seeing a pervasive spread in this information, or are we seeing a small group of individuals out of an overall larger group who are reporting dissatisfaction? And I just ask if the council utilizes this for strategic planning and shape planning, we want to know that the trends are more than small sample 1 or 2, and it's more of a pervasive problem. I think that helps shape the council's direction for goal setting. Although, again, with the adaptive equipment, with the React technology training, I think that's pretty clear, and we're picking up on that trend. hand, and that's why we're working on some potential solutions for what we can do. So as I'm scrolling down this report, I'm not seeing that I highlighted anything else I want to bring the folks' attention beyond that. Again, you all were forwarded the complete survey, and I'm happy to take any questions that anybody may have. You folks there?
Yes. It's just that, Brian, you were very thorough.
Okay, well, that's good.
Okay, can we move on to the next item under new business, which is the COVID-19 update?
Sure. That's me again. I'm going to take another sip of coffee here with me. I guess this is my turn to talk a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. All righty. So, obviously, I've been sending out the updates that the governor's been putting out. Hopefully, folks have been reading them. The most recent one did contain his latest executive orders, where there has been some easing of some of the prior restrictions. So, I think that's obviously a very positive and encouraging sign. Right now, folks from age 45 on up are eligible to receive the vaccine, and I'm sure many of you have already been either attempting to schedule your appointment or you've gotten your appointment. And if you've had difficulty, you need to keep trying. These appointments go very quickly. But you just keep trying, and you'll get through, ultimately. Tentatively for April 5th, age 16 and up will be eligible to get the vaccine. And there is an appointment phone line. I did use that line myself. I found that they had the high-end view of where every single appointment was. And rather than me trying to chase after, you know, like who had an opening and then nobody would disappear before I could even register, I think that the appointment assist line is a valuable tool. The phone number for that is 877-918-2224. But if for any reason you can't recall or you misplace it, you call 211 info line and they can assist you so that you can get connected to where you need to be. The other thing I just want to say is obviously we are still working virtually. I do not yet have a date as to when we will be back in the office. Right now we only have a small number of folks who come into the office on a part-time basis. Everyone else is pretty much 100% virtual. We do have opportunities to go into the field. Supervisors can approve staff requests to go into the field, and if there's no other way to provide a service, if it can't be done virtually, we will go into the consumer's home or place of employment or wherever, but we will first ask some screening questions. They're the same types of screening questions that CDC has recommended, just to be sure, you know, nobody's got COVID symptoms, so that everybody's safe. And, but we can provide services in person, and we have been doing it. Our mobility instructors are probably the ones that have been doing it the most. They do social distance, but they go out into the community. And, you know, stay tuned for further details. Again, things are starting to open up in our state again. It is very encouraging to see that, you know, there's more and more venues that are opening. And I think that you'll start seeing more and more that we'll be able to start resuming with some greater frequency in-person services. So that's the COVID-19 update. If there's any questions on that, I'm happy to take. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we're going to keep going with Brian with the next item on the agenda, report from SB State Director. First is a program update. Brian?
Just rest my throat for a couple of minutes. I know Mary has some things that she's going to report on. So, Mary, can I ask you to go first?
Definitely, yes.
give you a break. A lot of what I was going to report, I had been recorded, or I'll try to keep it concise and short and not repeat a lot of it. But I just wanted to give you an update on some of our hires. We've had a couple hires since the pandemic has begun. In September, we did hire a new transition coordinator, Stacy Lewis, to cover the northern part of the state for our transition students. She replaced Jennifer Eukers, who retired probably in April or May. So she's pretty much hit the ground running and is working with students actively right now. And we also had Mark Ward move to another, part of our agency, VRS. So Charlotta Copenhaver has taken over his job covering the southern part of the state for transition students as a transition counselor. So has been here for a number of years, so it's also hit the ground running. So it's pretty much up and running as our two transition counselors. We did recruit to replace Charlotta's position, which would be covering the south central part of the state for a regional counselor, working with our adults. And we did post for that about a month or so ago, and we're in the process of setting up interviews. And we have quite a few candidates for that position, so hopefully we'll be hiring somebody shortly, and so that's in the works. We did have a rehab technologist start on March 12th. Her name is Christiana Vecino, and she's going to be covering the southern part of the state. We're kind of rearranging our technology territories a little bit. This is the first time that we have actually had a technologist or even a rehab teacher invoke rehab reporting to the southern part of the state. So she is actually, when we do go in person, going to be reporting to Stratford, and covering Lower Fairfield County, New Haven County, and the entire southern part of the state. So she's also hit the ground running. She's already starting to accept referrals from some of the counselors, and she's moving on, she's going forward. So we're excited to have her. She replaced Julie McQueen, although the position is a little different than what Julie was doing. And as all of you know, Julie passed away in April of last year, so this is her replacement. But the job duties are a little bit different than what Julie was doing. She's actually going to be doing technology. She's going to be doing assistive technology evaluations and going into employers and assessing what technology they need for the southern part of the state. Brian kind of already addressed the technology piece that we have. In the last probably 3 months, we've done a big initiative working with the Computers for the Blind and some other vendors to buy some computers for our laptops or computers for our clients to be able to access technology and, to have the technology available to them to access online programs. With everything being closed down, our clients have had a hard time being able to access programs. In person was what they used to do, so they've been, accessing them more online. Like the American Job Centers have offered a lot of their programs online. So we're working hard to get our clients the technology available to be able to access those programs. And we do have a few enrolled in programs such as the Healthcare Academy Certificate Program, their Assistive Technology Program, and we're continuing to work on getting them more computers as will come in available. I'd say since we've done this initiative, probably have ordered about 10, so we're continuing to do more. There's also a lot of other of our programs that are offered online. The Carroll Center, the World Services for the Blind, Helen Keller, Leap Vermont, which specializes in working with work readiness for our transition students. Those are all programs that our clients have accessed while things have become virtual. None of those programs currently are in person. They're all online. So we have had a lot of our clients participate in those programs. I know some of them are working on a reentry plan for the summer. I know Carroll Center for that. So
so they are starting to have more of the residential programs coming up in the summer. So I don't know how many of our how many of our clients will be interested in that, but we're working on recruiting some of our clients to go into our transition program. A couple of the other events that we've done, our transition coordinator that you just heard from, Barry Rita, has done a bunch, three different mentoring events. One was in September, one in December, and one in February. Each of these events had three mentors each, talking about their experience working, going through college or whatever their experience was to give individuals and an opportunity to learn about how to work in a variety of different fields, as an individual who wants. And each event had about 10 or more participants, so it was a pretty good turnout. Our college counselor, our transition counselor, Charlotta, is doing some workshops in April. She's doing four online college prep workshops to help our individuals who are transitioning out of high school and going into college about our process of financial aid, along with working with disability coordinators and a bunch of other topics related to college preparation. And that's going to be happening four different times, four different workshops in April. We do have a bunch of presentations that our counselors are working on. A couple notable ones, we're speaking to the Human Resource Association of Central Connecticut to talk about opportunities for employment and to also go over, what our services at FSU provide and working with individuals who are blind. There's a pretty good number of individuals who will be attending that presentation. Another presentation is scheduled for the Hispanic Council of Hartford for the same purpose, to discuss employment opportunities and, to discuss, how to work with individuals who are blind, the technology, and different aspects of our program. So pretty much it.
Thank you, Mary.
Welcome.
Brian, do you have anything to add to the program update?
Yeah, I'm going to give a little bit of budget update information, but I want to, Mary mentioned the virtual services through the one-stop service delivery system, which has been a tremendous step forward for our clients because, again, trying to get to the one-stop career center and then the technology, do they have technology that the client is able to utilize? So by having it, we're now addressing it, having the clients have the technology in their homes, access these trainings, these certificate programs individually from their homes. I have some data on that because our counselors on a monthly basis turn in their data and I record it because we need it for our state plan. So here's some stuff. VR counselors have been participating in virtual business service meetings. These are business service meetings with other partners in the one-stop service delivery system so that they can collaborate on where the job opportunities are, hiring, and doing a job fair virtually. And our counselors on 32 separate occasions have participated in these during the 18th fiscal year, which, again, this is a program year, so that would have started July 1. Clients have participated in one-stop service delivery services virtually 125 times, which that's pretty significant in its own right. We've had 62 clients register for one-stop services. We've had clients participate in virtual job fairs 81 times during this time period. So I'm really encouraged by seeing that, again, the virtual world has opened up some opportunities for client engagement where transportation is no longer a variable. So, again, I hope that these virtual offerings continue once we get past the pandemic crisis. In terms of the program funding, our biggest challenge is still our inability to find things to spend money on. Because the reality is that with all the community providers that have not been open, the virtual programs that come at a much lower cost than the residential programs where you're on site for a period of time, expenditures are down. And so the good news is, you know, 3-4 years ago, we were on the cusp of order selection, and the state rehab council had to focus on some really hard decisions around some policy changes. I'm really pleased to say that, you know, there's quite a bit of federal fiscal year 2020 money still available, and we still have the entire federal fiscal year 2021 federal funds available. Now, I'm positive we're going to need to request a waiver of our basis of effort because we will not admit it. We just didn't have enough to spend our non-federal dollars on because of the pandemic's impact on the availability of purchase service options. So we'll pursue a waiver for that. But, you know, the VF program is looking relatively solvent. Looking across some of our other programs, business enterprises is really, I think, probably been impacted the hardest of any of the programs, and this is national. You know, the Randolph-Shepard program, the federal law, the business enterprise program administers that and that provides opportunities for folks that are blind to have businesses in public locations. Cafeterias, workshops, gift stores, and most, nearly all of them are not open right now. There's nobody in these buildings to buy a sandwich, and therefore the cafeterias are closed, the bag shops are closed, the gift stores are closed, other than a small number of micro markets, kind of like self-service, which you can keep at a fairly minimal inventory so that you're not losing money. Most of the vendors have been out of business for a while. We're waiting for, you know, for opportunities to open up. There's going to be seasonal opportunities coming up again this summer. We ran seasonal ones last summer, and we'll have those coming. But under the last stimulus bill, the one prior to the one that just passed, there was an appropriation to help the vendor facility managers who were impacted financially because of COVID, and I'm pleased to say Connecticut's going to be getting about $315,000 that we'll be able to provide to the blind vendors that have had income loss. So to the extent that they lost income this year compared to last year, and that income hasn't been offset by other sources of income they were able to get, or other grants or other programs, and we're going to be able to be helping them by putting some money back. So I think that was important to let you become a leader of that. And that's my report.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Do we have any questions for Brian or Mary? Okay, we're going to move on to the legislation update. Brian, is Andrew here, or are you going to give this report?
Hello? Hi, Andrew. Hi. Would you like me to speak at this point?
Yes, Andrew.
Is my voice clear?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. What you may already know, so I apologize if something is duplicative or you say something you know, but I don't know what everyone knows. So last year, Aging and Disability Services had an agency bill, but it never got passed because the legislature shut down because of the coronavirus disease, COVID, of course. And so we introduced roughly the same bill this year, starting over like a lot of people did. And it's mostly technical. It's not concerning the Department of Aging and Disability Services, Senate Bill 10055. It deals with some issues regarding the advisory board for people who are deaf. It also addresses our Tech Act loan program. And that's a program, maybe some of you have used it, I don't know, to help people who may not be able to afford buying a piece of important adaptive equipment by lending them money. Well, the law says that we will lend money out of our funds. But what we found out works better is to get a bank to partner with us to lend people the money, because they're much better at, you know, processing and serving loans. And if someone does use the bank, they might build up some credit if you're buying, I don't know, it could be a CCTV, but any number of items. And so we're seeking to change the law in that regard. And then the other thing that touches on bad seeds, not in a very serious way, is the law allows people to make gifts to FESB, and that's been true for a long time, and a lot of times there are people who do, during their lives or in their wills, make a gift to FESB. And the law also allows people to give a gift to the Commission on the Debt when they existed, and to BRS when they were a separate agency. So we have three sections of statutes that allow people to give money to ADS, and we're proposing to merge them into one, because that's all we need. So that bill is actually up for a public hearing tomorrow in the Human Services Committee. Commissioner Porter is planning to testify. I don't think it'll be controversial. There are a number of other bills out there. There are some bills out there trying to modernize our laws regarding guide dogs and service animals, to actually stop using the term guide dogs and use the term service animal as defined by the federal government. Now, the definition in the federal government is a dog that is trained to assist someone. But there could be some confusion in that area, so they're modernizing those statutes. Also, one or two legislators have put in bills to try to promote binding employment for people with disabilities, and getting, for example, in this case, the Department of Economic and Community Development and various workforce initiatives to be more mindful of people with disabilities. We're appreciative of those efforts, and I can report that already Mr. Sigmund, Brian, and Dave Dokus at BRS have been interacting with and educating people at the Office of Workforce Strategy about our program, and building what already exists, but building on interagency work to make sure that people who are developing programs for employment are making sure people with disabilities are on that train, are considering. Of course, they are in our agency. That's who we serve, people with disabilities. But we're working extra hard to make sure other employment programs include our clientele. And there's some bills working on that. But we may be able to make progress there even without a bill. So we're working hard on that. The legislature adjourns officially on June 9th. So there's a couple more full months of time for them to finish. They've got a lot of big issues out there, like sports betting and legalizing marijuana, and issues regarding race and racial equity and equality. I mean, that's just a short list. You know from the newspapers, there's lots of different issues out there. And so we'll be paying attention. A lot of issues regarding nursing homes. ADS's Office of Long-Term Care Ombudsman is very involved in those, as is our commissioner, having been on the Nursing Home Task Force. A big issue after the COVID, it's not over yet, but during the COVID crisis, is making sure people in nursing homes have technology available to stay in contact with family members. So that they can, through different devices, stay in contact with the outside world, which was so difficult or almost impossible during the COVID shutdown. Also, there are bills to allow people in nursing homes to have a designated representative, a support person, that maybe could come into the nursing home even when everything's shut down. People are reporting really serious health and emotional consequences from people having no contact and no one checking up on them other than the nursing home staff themselves. So a lot of people want to make that better. Those are some of the issues. I think I'll stop. I'll bet I've forgotten something, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. No, I don't think there's any questions for Andrew. Thank you, Andrew.
And at any time a question occurs to people later, you can always email me, andrew.norton@ct.gov, if you have a question that occurs to you later, or you're just too shy right now to ask it. I'm always available.
I still have a question.
Oh, no, it's too late. I see. Go ahead. Who was that, by the way?
Oh, it's Gary Allen. So the thing where they're trying to update the service dog definition. You know, when they say service dog, I prefer, you know, in my opinion, I think we should prefer to keep it the way it is as far as guide dogs, because they're two different things, in my opinion. Guide dogs are sometimes essential for people, and sometimes the service dogs aren't. And I think the people on the phone, I hope they agree with me. The people that own service dogs, what do you think?
Well, while people are thinking of responding, I'll say that what this bill, the bill does, and I forgot the number, but I can look it up. What this bill does is use the term service animal, and I understand that you like the existing term guide dog, but they're using it as defined in federal law, and that defines it as a dog that is trained to provide a service to a person with a disability. So it could be a dog that anticipates seizures. It could be a dog that assists a person who is deaf in responding to outside sounds. It could be a dog that helps people avoid falls. And of course, I think the most common is a guide dog for someone who is blind. So this bill does not endeavor to expand that definition beyond people with a physical disability with using a trained animal. And I understand there is this, at times, a hot topic of emotional support animals that people are saying they should be entitled to bring into public accommodations that aren't, if the animal isn't trained in any way, it's just they want this animal nearby, and they feel, and there's a bit of a controversy between people advocating for emotional support animals and their general use, and other people who are concerned that it could water down the whole provision, that whereby the entire public accepts that people bring service dog places, but their acceptance might diminish if it seems too broad. But this bill isn't fighting off that issue. And so just to let you know, but that issue is out there lurking around in lots of different cases. I actually just read of a case, it's not about emotional support, but I thought it was interesting. The New England ADA Center put out a notice that a woman was denied access because she had two dogs, and apparently she should not have been. She had a dog that sniffed out for allergies, some allergens that were very dangerous to her, and another dog that helped her anticipate or prevent falls. So they were both trained dogs, and they were both dogs used for a physical disability. But it was held that she should have been allowed to have both dogs. But again, that was just a point of interest. That doesn't touch on the emotional support animal issue, which does have its controversies.
If I may, this is Dennis Regan. Coincidentally, today graduated from CEI, and my instructor's waiting in the driveway for my very last walk with my new dog, Miles.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's actually awesome. But my only observation, briefly, and obviously you're closing soon, is that all my material, all of their diplomas, the ID, all of their intellectual.
Hello?
Dave, we lost him.
No, that's too bad.
Hello? Yes, we hear you. Hi. Andrew, I agree with your...
Hello?
Did
you lose me?
Yes.
Yes.
My just as you were talking about the diplomas.
Yeah, I'm proudly carrying my certificate, my graduation certificate. All of their intellectual property uses the word guide dogs. And there is also a branding. So one of the alternative organizations for is called Guide Dogs for the Blind. The culture of seeing eye organization in Morristown, New Jersey. I just got through with their.
Hello, Andrew.
I'm here. I think. Can you hear me? But the poor fellow keeps dropping off.
Yeah, I'll until he comes back in. I guess I have a Fidalgo German Shepherd guide dog, and I agree with the change in terms. I'm not offended by her being called a service animal. That's what she is, a service dog. I went to Hartford a couple years ago to testify when they were trying to infringe upon that service dog nomenclature by adding comfort animals and things like that into the mix. And there was a woman there, and no offense to the gentleman just spoke, certificates, ID cards, they mean nothing with respect to the law and under the ADA. But this woman came here with a photo ID of her and her little chihuahua and was telling the co-chair of the committee that, you know, she's proud to wear this ID. This is a comfort animal. She's certified. And, you know, went out this whole 20-minute rambling speech. It sounded really good. Hey, I'm a social worker. I bring these dogs here and there. And I get up and I said, you were hoodwinked. You know, this dog is not trained to provide a service to mitigate a particular disability, and that's what a service animal is. And, you know, people just don't know. So having my dog called a service animal or a guide dog doesn't matter. The service she provides is a guide, but she is a service animal. So
am
I don't
back?
Find offense with
them. Am I back? Can people hear me?
You're back.
Oh, the poor guy.
I think he's disconnected again. Thank you for your comments. Were you done with your comments, Bill?
I am, thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, does anyone have any other questions or comments for Andrew?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the report from Chair. So first of all, I would like to thank Mary and all of her amazing staff at Besby for all of their hard work and, you know, continuing the services throughout this pandemic. Been very hard, but you guys are doing a great job, and thank you for caring about us. I just want to say that, yes, thank you, Mary. And I just want to say that, you know, Lucretia, John, and I had a great opportunity to participate with Barry Rita and his transition students with the teleconferences that we did. And I want to thank Barry. And just say we had a lot of fun, and that was a really great opportunity. Also, Vice Chair Mike and I, we attended the CSA VR and the NCSRAD conferences in the fall. We're going to be attending those two in the spring as well. And I just wanted to state what those acronyms stand for. So the CSAVR stands for the Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehabilitation, and it's a national organization comprised of directors of state VR education.
And NCFAB stands for the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind. And I'd like to thank Desi for giving us the opportunity to attend these virtual conferences. And I find it very interesting to hear about, well, you know, what other states are doing for people with visual impairments and blindness. And, you know, it's exciting to know that, you know, Connecticut is right up there with the other states and what they're doing. And it all sounds and is very promising. And to conclude, our next meeting is going to be June 23rd, 2021 at 10 a.m. via teleconference. And that's it for my report. The next item on the agenda is adjournment. So, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Mike, I'll move to adjourn.
Okay, Mike, thank you. Do I have a second motion to adjourn? This is Lucretia. I will second the motion. Okay, Lucretia, thank you. All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
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 Do we have any that like to stay on the line? Okay, so motion passes to adjourn. Take care, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. Bye-bye, y'all. Bye-bye.